Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Bo Collins with the first touchdown of this game.
Sean McDonough with the call on ESPN. Good morning, Metroplex. It is the live Friday edition of Sean, RJ, and Bobby here on DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan as we try to get you to your weekend as quickly as possible. I'm Sean Sharif alongside RJ Choppy. We got Cowboys insider Bobby Belt, Chris Strong in for Pepe, Mike McCarthy for the final time this regular season, at least at 6:30. Getting emotional?
I like Mike. I'm not getting emotional because I'll be able to talk to him 20 times next year.
Oh.
And the year after that.
Oh.
Y'all are just that close.
Uh-huh.
It'd be like you and Banny.
That's right. Well, I have Banny's number. I don't have Mike's.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Mike hasn't thrown it that. I don't know if Mike's a golfer.
Let's talk about the Sugar Bowl and what happened yesterday in New Orleans with the postponement after the tragedy on Bourbon Street. You bet the under.
I bet the under. I bet it was Georgia -2. And then I went in the middle of the game at right at halftime, and I took Georgia +9.5 and on the money line. So I was 1-3 last night. It was a tough night. Tough night. The under, I knew the under was going to play. It was that game was played to about a 17-10 score.
Yeah, you hit the under, and Bobby, you hit the winner in picking Notre Dame, I think, to eventually make it to the championship game. But obviously, you get this W yesterday over the Bulldogs.
Oh, yeah, and I get this W over the SEC is what I get. And RJ Choppy and that cult that you guys run over there. We are like, SEC football is just different. Really? Is it different? It doesn't seem that different, as Texas is the only SEC team remaining, Chop.
That's CFP. True. They did play a FCS team to get there.
I mean, you still qualify as the SEC.
Yeah, you do.
No. Dumbass. No, we're bigger than the SEC. No, okay. We are our own brand.
Oh, I see.
It's like the Cowboys being bigger than the NFL. That's what we are here in the SEC.
Talk about the game.
it's exactly on display what we talked about with Notre Dame all year. Like, defensively, they are incredibly impressive, and they can overwhelm you at times. And Marcus Freeman is fantastic coach. In fact, I think the thing that's interesting about Notre Dame is we talk about this at the NFL level a lot. I don't know that we always see on the college level like tactical advantages and different things like that. It's more just, all right, you've got a really good play caller overall, or you've got, you know, these advantages here with your roster and different things like that. I think Marcus Freeman is a big time advantage on the sideline in terms of the way that he motivates and locks guys in.
He was on special teams.
Yeah, and he's...
Now I could think of his Bones Fossil and our disasters during the year with what they did to Georgia getting the automatic first down.
Well, they had that, that first down. They were inside their own 10. They were inside their own 10-yard line when they did that one. But also, you know, obviously the kick return, and, you know, when your kick returns, they're so difficult to gauge, right, when they're going to happen, because they never do happen. And that one especially, that wasn't a guy who just found a seam and ran. Like, he kind of weaved in the beginning of that and then got away. But yeah, like this was a classic game of, you know, Mike has always talked about these games come down to three plays, four plays. That truly was. You had a fumble in the red zone, you had a fumble inside your own 20, and a kick return. And there's 17 points at minimum, maybe 21 points, which... And
a field goal after the 67-yard pass play that had number 39. I just went to Twitter and typed 39 search.
Parker Jones or Parker whatever.
Parker Jones. And damn, does he look like a Georgia kid. He's named and he looks like a Georgia kid with that haircut. And he is trending all over the place, unfortunately, for he and his family.
And this is a tough game for me to watch. These are probably the two schools I hate more than anything else. I hate Georgia. And I hate Notre Dame.
God, love the Notre Dame. Look, the Notre Dame helmets, though, the uniforms, they get me every
time. They're good uniforms. The
helmet is so good.
It's their in-game, like, music I love. Like their fight song is great, but
Ave Maria and stuff like that.
They did not play Ave Maria during the game. Their traditions are awesome. It's a fun spot to go to when you go to a game up there. But, yeah, this was, like, just a brutal game for me to watch.
But that was the 67-yarder. The kid interferes with the referee. They walk it back 15 yards. It was nothing. The play would have ended at the 10-yard line. And then Nick Harris and others making fun of the commentators going, man, I feel bad for that kid. Number 39. Man, this is a tough thing. You don't want to go through a Parker Jones. He's in dorm C.
Like, yeah.
Basically outing and talking about every detail of his life. And then, as you said, the Georgia red zone fumble. 39 seconds left in the half. Notre Dame's up 6-3, strip sack, ball in the Georgia 13, next play, touchdown, 13-3. And
then the opening kick to the second half, it's 20-3 at that point.
20-3, game over.
Yeah, and that was your game. You're cooked at that point.
It was an ugly game, I thought.
It was an ugly game. I mean, Notre Dame doesn't throw the ball well. They only threw for like 90 yards. But it was funny. Like, there were some people out there that said, you know, Riley Leonard has to run for about 85 yards, and he ran for like 87.
Right,
he had to, because that was
his third and seven somersault.
His ability to run the ball was, I mean, that was their best offense.
I was talking to somebody yesterday after that game ended in NFL circles, and they were talking about Riley Leonard, and they were saying that Riley Leonard's not any sort of like big time pro prospect at all, but they're like, if you want somebody to just gut it out gamer type for these types of performances at college, Riley Leonard is perfect quarterback for you to have in terms of just being a field general and somebody that is going to give you every ounce of toughness that he can. And that's something where a couple different times last night, picking up big runs and big first downs. And he's somebody who gives them a little bit of a dynamic that some of the other teams don't have with the ability to run.
Perception is also an amazing thing. What I think this new format and tournament has done is benefit Ryan Day and Marcus Freeman greatly. James Franklin as well. But my point is, instead of just being thrown into a Final Four, the book on Notre Dame has been, oh, you're not in a real conference. You just sneak your way in. You don't really belong. You get smacked in the first round. Well, now you got two rounds that you've won before you get to that Final Four.
Right.
And now, no matter what happens to Notre Dame, it feels like Marcus Freeman has done a tremendous job because of the first two rounds of winning, at least in my mind. Ryan Day, instead of being thrown into the Final Four, you lose your first game. Mm-hmm. Maybe Mike Vrabel's taking over there. They run you out. Now, Ryan Day is safe after the big-time win over Oregon. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yep. Instead of that first loss in your first game, Final Four, the playoff has allowed, you know, the longevity of the postseason tournament now to benefit you, depending on your situation.
Now you get a month of good vibes.
Yep.
You get a month of positive talking on social media, you know, around the program. The program's excited. You could see it build, right? You could see it build week to week.
Sark.
Yeah, for sure. He wasn't in danger of going anywhere.
Yeah, and they had an easier draw, but it's like, okay, you know, Sark may have the biggest question mark, I guess.
It's funny, it's like almost like,
not that he's gonna go, but certainly Ryan Day, you know, feels like, I think they've accomplished more because of
Well, they had more to lose.
Yeah.
They had more to lose, but also like it's like Quinn's like his arrow's going down. Yeah. The more they win,
Quinn's kind of holding you back.
The more down his arrow's going until he goes to Oregon next year for $6 million.
I mean, he did. At the end of that game, Quinn was huge.
Yes, he was.
But, I mean, if you look at...
back-to-back big plays.
You could make an argument that the people with the three biggest questions entering the CFP were Ryan Day, James Franklin/Drew Aller, and Quinn Ewers. And three of those, all three of those people with questions left are sitting in the semis right now. Like they all have gotten to this point where they get through here.
Yeah,
and,
but you're talking like, you know, I resent the way you're talking about Quinn here to start off.
Why?
Because you're terrified of him too. And he's done nothing to settle the nerves of Longhorn fans. You're still terrified of him. And if there was a vote out there to start Arch Manning, a lot of Longhorn fans, probably the majority, would still go ahead and start him. So him being in this spot, I don't think has answered anything.
I mean, 4th and 13 didn't answer anything. And
no,
then that's
it
right
didn't.
Back.
And it didn't answer anything for you either.
No, it doesn't.
So stop acting like you're totally fine and cool. And
I'm not totally fine and cool.
Now you're giving Quinn Ewers a check mark. I'm not going to let you do that.
I know. I'm not totally fine and cool with Quinn Ewers. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that in general, the three people who have the biggest pressure on them entering this thing have stepped up in massive moments. All of them. Regardless of what you want to say, Quinn stepped up on a down.
Good.
On back-to-back throws. What the hell are you talking about? There were two plays in a row that he stepped up.
Okay, well, then you support Quinn Ewers leading up to the
Yeah, I will now just because of your attitude.
Wow, way to go. Cool. I'm going to be a backwards-ass troll
yep,
guy
damn
instead
right.
of say my real
Texas
thoughts.
By 14 now.
All right, cool. Have fun in 20 minutes. 877-881-105.
I'm going to have so much fun in 20 minutes.
877-881-1053. Franco injury attorney text line here on DFW Sports Station. We have an inside report on what really happened with Zeke Elliott. Coaching rumors all over the place as well. And the big fella, Mike McCarthy, maybe for the final time ever with us in 20 minutes. Sean, RJ, and Bobby just getting started on The Fan.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Stars take over right off the draw. Shot, score, hits! And it's Dallas's turn to go back-to-back and back in front.
Victory Plus with a call. Chris Strong in for Pepe with his Dallas Star sweater on.
Look at that.
And look at that little sneaky devil at the game last night. Yeah. Peyton Russell. Not Chris. Pepe was there with the fiance. He didn't even tell us yesterday throughout the entire show he was going to the game, did he?
He did not. He did not tell us. He didn't say anything. I didn't notice any commentary off air either.
Yeah.
Nothing.
It's fine. He probably recorded a lot of bits that he'll be bringing back Monday morning.
The Stars have now won 4 out of their last 5, and they leap over Colorado for the third spot in the Central after a come-from-behind 4-2 win against Ottawa at the AAC.
Man, look, you had to beat Ottawa. You're a better team than Ottawa. I did not notice this little nugget that Spittle sent over, that they're the third team to win 1,000 games this century.
Wow.
You know, the Bruins and the Caps are the other ones. I did not know that. I would not have guessed that. I would not have guessed that they had been, I mean, they've been good for a long time, but I would not have guessed they were the third winningest team this century from a win standpoint.
Hintz is on a roll as well. Had a 2-goal night. The hot streak continues. 4 goals in his last 5 games. Jason Robertson is equally as hot. He now has 23 points in his last 22 games dating back to November 11th, Spits and Suds out with more of your hockey knowledge.
72% on the deserve to win o meter.
Chris, turn off his mic. 4 expected goals to 1.3. Turn off his mic. Whenever Bobby talks hockey or about to talk hockey, turn off his mic, Chris.
Hates analytics. Dinosaur over here.
Go out with a bang.
Shaunosaurus.
Go out with a bang. Bobby, I'm going to send you into the weekend looking like Jay Leno if you keep it up. You're going to look like Jay Leno with a missing fingernail.
What's going on with that, man?
More in the junk drawer and more on Zeke Elliott's exit courtesy of Nick Harris, Fort Worth Star Telegram, with the story.
Yeah, this is a story that Nick had dropped yesterday, and the vast majority of it is just general timeline overview of, like, here's when Zeke got here, here's how things kind of started to turn. A lot of the stuff that we knew already with the suspension and a lot of the disappointment with what his playing time was going to be or what his availability was going to be. But there was an interesting note here at the end of this where he says that a moment after the team's win in Carolina, saw him try to crack a joke in the locker room with fellow teammates that was not well received. As one teammate walked away from him scoffing mid-sentence, The next week, he would see the field for a career low 3 snaps and a big win over the Buccaneers. His confidants and supporters in the locker room were few, if any. His impact on the field was non-existent. It was clear that Elliott would not return in 2025. What we maybe didn't anticipate was how quick he would actually hit the door. And Zeke's whole presence in the locker room for a long time has been as the on the jokester. And I'm just the big kid in here. And if it had reached a point where he couldn't even get people to engage with him when he's trying to be lighthearted, it's like, man, that sounds like it had reached a point of just completely toxic. If teams are walking away from him and just kind of like, okay, dude, in the middle of him just trying to be Zeke.
So weird.
That's a... I think he walked into this locker room thinking he was going to be, I'm the elder wise man now.
I'm Udonis Haslam.
Yeah, and he walked in as just, you're any other dude. There is literally nothing here. You have no standing with this group of players.
That's a little odd.
1 year later.
1 year later. Now it's obviously there's turnover every year in the NFL, but it's not like nobody has heard of Zeke Elliott.
Parsons, Tank, Zach, Dak. CD,
right.
Jordan,
like, yeah.
Plenty of guys in the locker room that you knew.
And every office, every locker room needs its court jester.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Gotta have it.
Now, it does have a tendency to kind of be drawn along offensive, defensive lines and locker rooms, and then even more, like, you're kind of potted up with the guys that you play with, like, in your position group. And so, I mean, a lot of those guys we just named there about Jordan Lewis and Micah and Tank, it's like, okay, well, those are all guys on defense, so those aren't necessarily going to be in the same guys in the same meetings with him. But, I mean, he sat in those rooms with Dowdle for a few years.
Yeah.
It's odd to see how he was not welcomed back the way he anticipated.
Mike McCarthy, a little reflective yesterday in asking his awareness level that this could be his last game coaching the Cowboys.
I'll be honest with you. I go to the stadium much earlier, you know, at this time in my career than I used to. And, you know, I won a Super Bowl in that home locker room at AT&T. So I have a very strong emotional attachment that it hits me every time I walk in there, every time I walk out. So, yeah, I'm definitely aware of it. And but, yeah, I know you got Zimmer up here. You're not getting me today. So, but, no, I'm not thinking about it right now, but yeah, I'm definitely in tune with that.
This is the type of year, Choppy, when I get a little soft, I get a little sappy, and my feelings start breaking out when I hear these possible final press conferences. Today, Mike's going to join us in about 8 minutes, and just hearing the reflection and all the memories, I start softening up a little bit versus just who should be the head coach here. Now, who's going to be the quarterback Sunday? Bobby tipped us off to this a few days ago. Everyone has now gotten their reports on it. Cooper Rush gets $500K if he plays 55% of the team's snaps this year. Going into Sunday, he has played 52.5. So how's that going to work out math-wise, Bob?
64. If they play 64 snaps in this game, he would have to play all of them to reach 55% of the team's snaps this year. But that's somewhere in the range of generally where Dallas has played this year. There have been some games where they played as few as 60, so they could play in the whole game potentially and he not hit it. But if they play over 65, if they get into 70 snaps, then Rush playing almost 100% of those, 68, 69 of those, he's going to get to 55. And so that'll be something potentially that they're considering.
The only way, what you wrote in your email last night, Choppy, was you can't wait to see what teams are cheap. And I was trying to think of the scenarios where we could catch the Cowboys and be able to tell. And I think because they have an out in playing Trey.
Of course they do.
Now, the counter back to that is you were eliminated before the Commander game. Why didn't you play Trey then? Why are you just playing him now? I think the only thing where the Cowboys could really screw this up and make themselves look bad and cheap is playing Cooper for 3 quarters.
And then sitting him.
And then having Trey just play 1 quarter. Even for maybe a second half, you can be like, we just wanted to get him a half.
Right.
And they could use that as their defense towards not paying Cooper a half a mil. But I want to ask Mike how he handles incentives and stuff. Does he get a sheet? And does he have to have a big sit down with the you-know-whos? Mm-hmm. Where they're like, hey, this doesn't need to happen.
The first game that they played post elimination, they had prepped Cooper to play all week because they were still alive. They didn't know until that afternoon.
True.
The last week, You know, that was the week you could have gone to play Trey Lance.
Mike McCarthy, for the final time this regular season, maybe for the final time ever with us, next on Sean and RJ. It is now time for the Mike McCarthy Show here on Sean and RJ. This is DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan, and the Coach's Show is brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys Commanders on this radio station, pregame starting at 9 a.m., kickoff with Brad and Babe at noon. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. How was vacation?
It sucked. I always tell fathers, don't have kids or get a lot of nanny help. So don't have them till you're really rich. They've been sick for about a month. So it's been torture, Coach. But thank you for asking.
Oh, wow. Okay.
How many diapers?
Good family time. Huh?
Yeah. How many diapers did you change percentage wise out of 10 diapers? Did you change 2, 3? Were you just in the office a lot?
I'll just say this. I changed the diaper every opportunity I had, but I mean,
there were many
that
opportunities.
Probably equated to what, 10%, 20%.
And then
I didn't have a problem with it, but yeah, I have a job that, you know, we work a lot.
Yeah. And then I got a youth sports problem. You know, Choppy's all baseball dad here, and I don't want to sit outside at 8 a.m. in 100 degrees. And RJ says, no, that's the best part. And I know you love attending and participating in the youth sporting events around here, but the practice, the schedule, isn't it too much? They practice more than you guys do.
No, I think it's incredible. I mean, the youth sports are in Texas, especially Dallas, I'm so impressed with. No, I do. I do love it. I love watching my kids practice. I love watching them play games. There's nothing like it.
All right. Maybe I'll have a third one. Then you talk.
Yeah. You need to come around.
My wife will send you a thank you card. Coach, a lot of there's the list of incentives is going around the league of what player can hit this and that. How do you approach that? Do you sit down and go, I'm going to get my guy this? Is it a front office discussion where sometimes maybe that type of payment doesn't want to be kicked out? How do you approach the whole incentive thing, if at all?
You know, to be honest with you, the financial part of it is, you know, I'm not really involved in that. I couldn't tell you with, you know, the contracts, the specifics of our players. I mean, usually when, you know, I'm asked to speak on it is something like today. But, yeah, I'm not totally engaged with their incentives, but I mean, I am aware if Rico, you know, looking to, you know, hit 1,000 yards, you know, or, you know, CD hitting 1,000 yards. I mean, those things are definitely statistical goals, or because, you know, it's part of the analytics, you know, profiles that we get each and every week on our desk on Monday and Tuesdays.
Are you the one that delivers the Pro Bowl news first, or have these guys gotten that information? I saw a video of Eric DaCosta letting Derrick Henry know and stuff. Do you get that info first to deliver it to the guys? And if so, how much of a joy is it for them still?
I mean, every place is different in the way it's done here. Jerry delivers the news, and then we follow up in the morning with a presentation and a team meeting.
Mike McCarthy joining us here, 105 through the Fan. You know, in a game like this where, you know, the standings don't matter, how do you judge and gauge and use players that normally don't get a lot of snaps and giving them snaps this week versus using the guys that got you to week 18 all year?
Well, that's a great question. I think just like anything, you know, practice does matter. And, you know, it's about creating opportunities because, you know, you go through the whole season, you know, long before this point where you have players that are battling every week and, you know, they're not on the 48, you know, so, you know, and that's tough for those guys each and every week. So, you know, it's not like you just have 48 players or 49 players each week that, you know, make it to participate in the game. So, you know, that matters. You know, a great example of that would be Deuce Vaughn. I mean, there's, you know, Deuce is always, you know, battling to be up each week, and then it, you know, situation usually it comes down to special teams. But, you know, but he practices. I mean, you know, you can see he's improving. He's getting better and better. But, you know, you have that pretty much throughout your football team with your young players.
Coach, you know, we in the media, we've probably asked you and Jerry dozens of times about Trey Lance, when's Trey Lance going to get a shot? You know, is that something where that question, though, even as a competitor, has ever been posed to you guys by Trey himself? Like, hey, am I going to get a shot to step in this week?
I think not as a direct, but I think just like anything, you know, actions speak louder than words. And what I see in Trey every single day is he's always prepared. You know, he prepares as if he is, you know, going to get that opportunity. And your whole quarterback room has to prepare that way. And that's part of why it's structured the way it is, where, you know, everybody has a role in there, you know, throughout the week of preparation to make sure we're all engaged. Because, you know, there's a lot that goes into game planning each week. No one has more responsibility than the quarterback position. And Trey is always prepared to be ready to go.
What's been different about Trey now versus when you first saw him walk on the field last year?
Oh, I just think, you know, his fundamentals, I think clearly, you know, everybody teaches a little different, you know, how the footwork is tied to the perimeter routes, you know, the command at the line of scrimmage, you know, the communication network is different for every offense. So, you know, all those things. So, I mean, he's improved in every area, and that's, you know, that's just a credit to, you know, his hard work. It's a credit to Scott Tolzien. You know, these men put a lot of extra time. You know, they're down on the Ford Center field here in about 15 minutes, you know, going through a pre-practice before work. So, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of time that's put into playing the quarterback position. And Trey and Will's down there, will be down there also this morning. But these guys put a lot of extra time in.
Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Mike, I think it was actually Ted Thompson who had given an interview in the past and said, when you're looking at smaller school guys, for instance, on tape coming out in the draft, you need to see them walk on water because of the level of competition. You need to see them play above such a high level. When you're evaluating at practice and you're trying to determine a guy who competitively is going to take a starting job or anything like that, do you have to see them perform so high above in the practice setting, or is it just a straight, all right, this guy's been better than this guy, so he's going out there on the field?
Well, I think it's really a universal evaluation question. I mean, when you're watching anybody compete, you know, who they're competing against is always part of the, you know, the equation of putting a grade on somebody. I mean, that's always been the case. I mean, that's some of the best, best evaluations. And I know I've been experienced is, you know, you're watching another guy and you notice somebody else. I mean, I remember we were watching Derek Carr coming out a few years back and then, you know, halfway through the tape, it's like, well, who the hell's the receiver? You know, and it was Devontae Adams. So, I mean, yeah, so you're always in tune with, you know, who they're playing with, who they're playing against. But yeah, definitely that's part of the evaluation formula.
Coach, we were looking at some of the analytical numbers about, you know, in recent weeks, for instance, against Tampa a couple weeks ago, you guys were running tighter formations than you had on average this year. There were more four receiver sets, I think, in that game than there had been in recent games. You know, you started running Kevontae Turpin a little bit more inside than it looked like had been used this year. Is some of that stuff lately just been matchup dependent, or are you tweaking some things and saying, you know what, let's see if we can have some success with this and trying to figure out some stuff that might work heading into next year as well?
You know, couple things. Number one, you know, you're always game planning against your opponent. The health of your offense and defense really factors in to that more than you would think. And you know, just the things that you feel better about what each player can do and things you might want to stay away from. So I mean, there's just a lot of different variables in that. You know, as far as Turpin, I mean, we've been running outside zones and edge plays with him, so that really hasn't. I mean, you know, if he cuts it back in the inside, that's, you know, that really isn't an inside run. But so that's been the same. But we have, you know, always been conscientious of trying to get the, you know, the ball distributed to the perimeter guys. And, you know, sometimes, you know, a player's opportunities based on game plan are going to be higher than, you know, higher one week to the next. You know, and obviously with CD out, you know, there's, you know, we're definitely looking for the other guys to take advantage of the opportunities because, you know, CD was always our lead focal point as far as ball distribution. So, yeah, and the formations of, you know, how we need to run the ball, how I like to run the ball. I mean, you know, all those factor in how we line up each and every week.
Mike McCarthy brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company here on DFW Sports Station with Sean, RJ, and Bobby. I was thinking about this with Jaden Daniels, and we always talk about this time of year, the rookie wall. Is the rookie wall a thing? Is it more of a thing with a 17-game season? And how do you approach that if it is a thing, Coach?
Well, in Jaden's case, I hope it shows up this week. It wasn't in place against Atlanta. But that's real. I think that's, you know, things you watch on an individual basis. That's an important, you know, focal point, particularly for the assistant coaches and the support staff. You know, that's part of that, you know, communication, staying engaged with your guys. And, you know, and it's definitely something that I'm aware of, you know, from a big picture as far as scheduling. You know, you have to, you know, factor in, it's not as much for the rookies too, but it's, you know, this time of year and, you know, playing on Thanksgiving every year. And, you know, because December is always, you know, the point where you got to be really on top of, you know, the players' practice, you know, their workload capacity and just the efficiency has to be the highest of the season. So, yeah, all those things play into it. And the rookies have the biggest challenge because, you know, they've never been through the length of this season. And it's the longest year of their life. You know, they play their senior year, prep for the combine, everything goes into that. And then they got to, you know, train a different way for that. And then the combine's over. And then they go right to a mini camp. And then so they're back into the football. And, you know, that leads all the way up into the training camp. And, you know, their training camp's longer than they've been accustomed to, and they play 20 games at least. So, that's a tremendous threshold for rookies to get over in this league, and you have to be in tune with that.
How do you weigh your competitiveness versus your friendship with DQ with the playoff and postseason berth?
What do you mean?
You just outright joy for Coach Quinn making the postseason, or there's a little NFC East like, yeah, congratulations, man. Your competitiveness versus your friendship with Dan and happy for him getting into the postseason.
Yeah, I think like anything, when it comes to competing, you know, I'm looking forward to competing against Dan and his team. But on a personal level, you know, you're always happy for, you know, to see your friends do well. But, you know, I definitely want to make sure we're doing better than he is in the future. But I am happy for Dan.
Coach, you've said all year you're not going to discuss your contract situation. So instead of looking ahead to anything like that, just kind of reflective and looking back over the last 5 years, what has this 5 years been like for you in Dallas as a coach and as a family man, kind of, you know, setting his family here in North Texas? What do you look back over the last 5 years and reflect on in Dallas?
Oh, I mean it's been a great experience for our family. You know, the start was, you know, different than anything, you know, any of us could ever imagine, you know, with the pandemic and, you know, and the family not, you know, being here the first, you know, year or so. So that was a very tough start, to say the least, both personally and professionally, just to, you know, start a football program during that year, you know, clearly, you know, wasn't ideal and it didn't go very well either. So, I'd say it was a rough start. But I felt like year two, we got the program, you know, going in the right direction and have done a lot of good things, you know, over the course of these 4 years. You know, this year was, you know, the challenges were high and, you know, we didn't get through them to the point that put us in the playoffs. So, you know, that's a bit of a disappointment, but this has been a great experience for my family. My family really enjoys, you know, living here. I can't say enough about the, you know, North Dallas, the city of Dallas, you know, PCA is a phenomenal school. I can't say enough about the, you know, the culture that they have over there. And it's been an awesome experience for our family.
Is it about what you expected it was going to be? I mean, you can never like really tell what a job is going to be like until you're in it. But I mean, the minutia that gets, you know, talked about here, is it about what you expected or more?
I mean, the radio shows are a pain in the ass. Other than that, it's about what I thought it'd be. But no, it's the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, it's one of a kind. I love coming to work every day, and I think it's, you know, doing this as long as I've done it, that's a gauge for me. If I don't jump out of bed, then, you know, it's time to, you know, maybe do something else. But I do it. I love getting here. Love here, getting there early. I love the players, the coaches, and you know this is what it's all about. And for my family, you know, that this, you know, the city, you know, I've been to Dallas over the years, so I've always liked coming here. And I've been down here on a personal level, you know, a lot of times, you know, both Dallas and Austin. So, but living out here in the North Dallas has just been awesome. I don't know if, you know, this is such an incredible place to raise a family. So it's been an awesome experience for us.
Coach, we know you're all about, you know, championships. Do you just view it as, do you view it through that lens and deciding whether it was a success or not, or you allow the gray area to come in and you're like, no, didn't win a title so far, so not a success? How do you view it?
Well, definitely. I think you clearly, you know, once you're able to, you know, lift the Lombardi Trophy, there's really nothing else to do this for, in my opinion. That's my approach, and that's what makes me go every day. But I'm not ignorant to the fact of levels of success, because you have to achieve different levels of success, and what you learn through those experiences, you know, there's different devils at every level, and that's why I think clearly handling success is the biggest challenge in our game. But yes, I mean, this, as we're sitting here today, this is not where we expected to be, but this is where we are. So there's a lot of value in going through the adversity that we have gone through, and it'll definitely pay forward, especially most importantly for the young players.
Well, look, on a personal level, just, you know, for radio nerding out purposes, we thank you again. Definitely much more enjoyable than some of the past times we've done this throughout our 15 years with people. And we thank you for putting up with us with the ups and downs and all the difficult and hard questions and the personality that you gave us along with the story. So we appreciate that, Coach. Are we doing it again next year?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. It'd be awesome. No, you guys are great. And I just want to wish everybody a happy new year.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Good luck on Sunday, man.
Thank you, man.
Bye-bye. Mike McCarthy, brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys.
I thought that was a pretty interesting last 3 or 4 minutes there.
Why?
He doesn't typically like to reflect a ton. And he's reflective. I don't know that tilts it either way, my thoughts on anything.
Would have to go back to maybe, well, you know what? I don't think we talked to him after the Green Bay game, because that would have been the only other opportunity where we sense maybe he might not be here to hear the interview answers. Right. But I don't think we had that.
And every other year, even if 12 we did. 5. Yeah, even if we did have it, he had a contract. Yeah. Like, you know, like it's, you know, and the only other time where they were eliminated.
And I don't remember Jason's last one with us.
We didn't do one. We didn't do it because he was on Monday. We didn't do one that Monday. But in 2020, it was his first year here. They were already eliminated. So we did elimination press conferences with or interviews. But there was no reflectiveness because, I mean, it was year one. So it's just, I mean, yeah, I don't like, I agree with, I don't know that it tilts it either way. But I think he's in a position now because they're eliminated. You can be more reflective.
Yeah, his willingness to reflect, though, and his willingness to talk about specifically, you heard him mention a ton there, and I know the original question asked it, but he kept circling back to his family and how they feel about Dallas and how they like it, and I thought
it was
interesting.
Does that make you think a certain way? Because my common sense would tell me that that's leading you to turn towards he may not be back more so than return.
That tells me, if anything, it might tell me just that he doesn't have security that he's staying. That he either doesn't think he's coming back, or he genuinely doesn't know. And so he's in a period of just kind of reflection of what has this been like the last 5 years.
I ask you every day when you go over there or talk to people on the phone, what are you hearing? What are they thinking? What are you hearing? What are they thinking? And I hope you don't mind me saying this, and I don't think I'm outing anything. It feels like the people you speak with have the same exact question marks that we have.
Yeah. No, I mean,
total unknown.
When you talk to people who are close to it and around it, they all are speaking with it's legitimately a coin flip. So the thought I think over there is either the Joneses literally have not made up their mind yet, or they have done such a good job of concealing it and keeping to themselves that they're not getting tipped off in any direction.
And I think that's absolutely it. They really have done a great job. The organization that can't shut up has done a great job shutting up.
Yep.
Do you think they Do you think Jerry knows what he's doing yet?
I was just wondering that.
Is that a literal question?
Stop. You know what I'm saying. Dude,
So I started thinking about the Dak deal in the last like 20 seconds and just how long it takes them to make up their mind. Like, you should know by now. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe you knowing... All right, let me rephrase it. You should know on whether you think Mike is your guy or not. That may not mean that you know if Mike is staying or not based upon the market.
Right. Like, Mike could get an offer from another job. Like, it's all bets are off.
Oh, no. I'm just talking about them surveying the landscape and saying, mm-hmm. is that the answer? That guy, is he better? Is that the change we need? But Jerry and Steven should definitely know by now whether they should have made up their mind on Mike McCarthy. That doesn't necessarily mean that they have to have made up their mind. I still think
to bring him back.
Yeah, I think through back channeling and everything, you should know. They should have, tampering aside, they should have reached out to Belichick. They should have already reached out to Vrabel. They should have done their homework. They should have talked to the agents. They should have done that stuff already. If they haven't, by the letter of the law, right, you know, and decency towards Mike, you don't want to get caught doing that. But they should absolutely know. But but it felt like they didn't know about Prescott twice. It felt like, well, we don't know if we've made up our mind yet. You've had the guy in the building. You've seen him at practice. You've seen him during the game. Yeah. It just feels like they take so long, Choppy, not just to do contracts, but to make up their mind. They're going to date you for 8 years before they drop on one knee. Not like Peyton eight minutes.
They're on their own schedule, as Jerry would say.
Yeah.
I think they made their mind up on Dak long before they gave him the contract. They were just waiting because they can. It's a power move. I think it's a power move with them.
Do you think they're doing power move with Mike or?
No, I don't. I think they're just because, like, here's the thing. You know, when they moved on from Jason, they didn't announce it on Black Monday or Tuesday.
I don't know. Did they ever even officially announce Thursday. He's not coming back, or was it just like they hired Mike?
It was a report, right?
Very weird.
It was a report about 7 days later. It went a whole week. And the whole hiring cycle had been finished at that point.
I'm back to about 60% that he's not back. I'm swinging the other way now.
I was talking to people on the beat yesterday, and they were saying the same sort of thing, where it's like every other day, like you ask me every other day, and I change my thought on whether I think he's coming back or not, which is probably what Jerry wants. Jerry wants us all to be that confused.
Absolutely.
They've made their mind up. But like you said, they like him. There's also things like they might offer him a low ball offer, right? They might want him back.
OC.
Yeah, they might want him back, but they want him back in certain circumstances.
What else is happening around the National Football League? Not just this weekend on the field, but all the other coaching and GM rumors out there. We'll get you what you need to know next.